interesting to think that the votes that could control, that could decide control of the U.S. Senate could have been in that room.
In small villages in rural Alaska, Senator Mark Begich is courting votes. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, August 13th. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, the University of Alaska Anchorage sets priorities for its degree programs.
What this report has done for us is gives us a clear mandate for change. We can look and see, you know, where do we want to head from here?
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
Senator Mark Begich last week visited the three lower Yukon River villages of Marshall, Alakanuk, and Amonuk. He heard from dozens of people about infrastructure needs and issues such as the importance of subsistence and the need for local law enforcement. But residents also talked about another reason for his visit, votes. KNBA's Jacqueline Estes went along and filed this report.
Democrats have the majority in the U.S. Senate by just 6 seats, so the race for Senator Mark Begich's spot is being watched closely across the country, and many rural Alaskans know he's counting on rural votes to win re-election. Here are two employees of the Yukon Fisheries Development Association chatting as they left a public meeting with Begich held in Alakanuk, a village of about 700 people. Offshore Fisheries Director Eric Olson comments on the significance of the meeting to General Counsel Jerry Davis.
Well, it's pretty interesting to think that the votes that could control, that could decide control of the U.S. Senate could have been in that room.
I know.
It's just amazing.
At a community meeting in Emonic, City Administrator Martin Moore praised Begich for coming to hear about local concerns while reminding him of the importance of addressing those concerns.
We have 400 people that will vote. That's important for you and for me to know and understand that. So your trip here is very important for you and important for the people that believe in your work.
But even though Begich and Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski both serve on the Senate Appropriations Committee, Begich says because Congress no longer allows earmarks, it's hard for the Alaska delegation to get funds inserted in the budget for specific projects. Plus, he says, Congress has tightened its purse strings.
The national deficit's been so bad, but in the last 6 years, we've gone down from about $1.4 trillion deficit per year down about half a trillion, moving in the right direction. And the economy is much stronger now in the lower 48. So everyone's feeling better about the budgets. This last year, we bumped them up a little bit, budgets overall. So now we're having some window finally. We can probably look at these programs again and see what we can do.
As residents talked about the need for erosion control, ports, housing, and water and sewer projects, Begich said the Alaska delegation has been able to get some laws changed to set aside money for places like Alaska and is working to do more.
You know, when you go to a city like Seattle, there's housing needs for thousands of people, and here we're looking for, you know, 10, 15, 20 units, we get kind of lost in the mix. So what we want to try to do is separate us out a little bit.
Begich outlined work he's already done to reduce energy costs, increase job training, and help with projects such as roads, runways, and a rock quarry project in Marshall. He described his support for subsistence and the senators and cabinet officials who are learning about Alaska's special needs by visiting the state at his invitation. Still, the rural vote for Begich is not a sure thing, as Robert Andrews, the head of a boat building shop in Emonic, made clear. He told Begich he could do more to help fishermen and said, if I vote for you, you better think about us back here. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
With the primary election less than a week away, two of the prominent Republican U.S. Senate candidates will appear in a statewide debate tonight on public broadcasting. The third, Dan Sullivan told the Associated Press he plans to be knocking on doors in the Anchorage and Eagle River areas. Sullivan's spokesman, Mike Anderson, says Sullivan has participated in a dozen debates and forums, the most recent on Monday. Anderson said by email that Sullivan recognizes the importance of reaching out to Alaskans in person. Republicans Meet Treadwell and Joe Miller are scheduled to participate in the debate, one of the last, before Tuesday's primary. The Air Force is jamming GPS signals periodically around military airfields in Alaska during red flag training exercises now underway in and around Eielson Air Force Base. And as KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, the interference testing could affect other devices that rely on GPS.
The Federal Aviation Administration is advising pilots flying around Eielson Air Force Base, Fort Greely, and Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson over the next few days to expect unreliable or unavailable signals for their aircraft's GPS set. Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Alan Knapp says it's being done to prepare military pilots to operate in environments in which GPS is not available.
In a modern contested environment, most of the modern battlefields that our airmen will face, the reception of GPS is definitely not guaranteed. It's something that is going to be up for grabs. And it helps to have our airmen experience GPS being denied here in a training environment like Red Flag prior to an actual engagement where they lose their GPS reception.
The FAA has issued several advisories in recent days informing pilots about the periodic GPS interference testing around the military airfields over the next 10 days during red flag. The agency says pilots may experience GPS problems at different times and at different altitudes. FAA officials ask pilots to report all GPS anomalies they encounter during the testing period to the agency's Anchorage Center to help them measure the extent of the problem. Knapp says the Air Force jamming should not affect cell phones or other mobile devices, but he says motorists will encounter problems with their vehicle's GPS sets if they're near any of the three military air bases during the testing. He says members of the public may also notice problems when using other devices that rely on GPS for time calibration.
I can't tell you that we categorically will not affect anything else. More and more technologies are drawing upon that and using it for their services they provide.
The FAA says additional notices to airmen will be issued throughout the GPS interference testing period to keep pilots apprised of any changes in plans. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Bethel citizens called for action from the city council regarding allegations of police brutality at their regular meeting yesterday. The city says they are investigating and officials are keeping the details under wraps as they are evidently facing litigation. KYUK's Ben Matheson has more.
Public testimony was emotional at the Bethel City Council meeting where Agnes Gregory, the sister of the man whom a witness says was violently arrested by a Bethel police officer, spoke before the council.
People treat their animals better than what he did to my brother, and everybody should be outraged about that.
A police report and court documents show that Wassily Gregory, a quote Indian male, was arrested near the AC store on July 12th by a Bethel police officer, Andrew Reed. A witness told police and the media that the officer used excessive force. Bethel's tribe ONC, in a press release Monday, urged people to come forward to them about possible mistreatment of Alaska Natives by Bethel police. Among the people who spoke Tuesday was Bethel resident Fritz Charles, who also hosts a show on KYUK.
One message I'd like to give advice to the police officer that are accused of these things. There's 10 flights a day out of Bethel. If you don't like your job, there's 10 flights out of Bethel. And up to this point, you guys are probably looking at legal issues. What now? What then? These are really tough situations, issues that the city of Bethel has to address and take action towards on immediately.
The city has opened an investigation. Interim city manager Greg Moyer says it's moving ahead quickly.
And she should be wrapping up that investigation by Friday. We're still looking for tapes from the AC store. Even though they're doing construction, there is a possibility, maybe a good possibility, that tape was...
City Attorney Patty Burley stopped Moyer mid-sentence, saying she had received notice that the city is facing litigation. She advised him to stop speaking on the matter. Moyer did tell KYUK the investigation will be reviewed by a third-party law enforcement group. He added the department will be putting cameras on police officers to record whenever they deal with the public. Councilmember Mark Springer says the council feels as deeply about this as the rest of the community and that the city is looking hard at the issue. In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, restoring salmon streams in southeast Alaska damaged by logging.
You know, you can kind of look at what nature provides and try to emulate those conditions, and it is kind of like a big puzzle.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Check the status of your permanent fund dividend application at pfd.alaska.gov. August 31st is the deadline for contributing to a college savings plan and to add or change charitable contributions. This message sponsored by the state of Alaska.
The University of Alaska Anchorage today released a comprehensive prioritization report examining both academic and support functions. APRN's Josh Edge reports.
Two task forces were assembled to take an in-depth look at every program and function at the university. One group focused on the academic side of things, while the other investigated support functions. Their goal? To determine which programs align with UAA's mission, which ones don't, and which ones need an even closer look. Programs like Alaska Native Studies, Art, English, and Women's Studies are ranked high, while ones like Economics, Political Science, and Music landed in the lower categories. UAA Vice Chancellor Bill Spindle says just because a program was identified as a low priority doesn't mean it's facing imminent cuts.
All it means if you're in one of these lower categories is that we're going to do further review. We may determine by that further review, my gosh, not only do we need to keep you where you are, we need to add stuff to you. We may realize that we can combine this with something else, but we're going to take a thorough look.
Spindle says one thing the reports have made clear is the breadth of programs and functions offered at UAA.
It's like a small city. We take care of everything here, from a police force to a maintenance organization to facilities, groundskeeping, everything you can think of that goes on in a municipality, we do here.
The task forces reviewed over 300 academic programs and nearly 180 support functions. Though the administration is still reviewing all of the information, Spindle says the task force's recommendations have given the university a good starting point.
What this report has done for us is gives us a clear mandate for change. We can look and see, you know, where do we want to head from here?
That's the big question for the university, and Spindle says it's one they can't quite answer yet. University officials expect to have a plan on how to move forward by December, and changes stemming from that plan could begin as soon as next summer. In Anchorage, I'm Josh Edge.
In June, Governor Sean Parnell signed Senate Bill 218 into law, paving the way for a $245 million renovation and upgrade to the power plant at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. But the project is funded in part by revenue bonds that have to be paid back to the state. The Board of Regents plans to implement a student fee to cover costs associated with the project. KUAC's Emily Schwing has more.
When the legislature approved funding for this year's state budget, the money allocated for a new heat and power plant at the University of Alaska Fairbanks came with this language. It is the intent of the legislature that the University of Alaska implement a utility surcharge or increase tuition in an amount not to exceed annual revenue of $2 million. With the project currently under construction, the university is now on the hook to pay back bonds to the state. That's why UA President Pat Gamble endorsed a proposal to implement a new system-wide student fee. Kate Ripley is the UA system spokeswoman.
There is never enough money that we really need to keep reinvesting and modernizing and keeping pace with what we really need to do. So this is seen as an opportunity to have an additional revenue stream.
Beginning spring semester 2015, graduate and undergraduate students and those enrolled in distance education courses will pay $2 per credit. The fee will increase by $2 more for the following two semesters. That means by January 2016, full-time students could see an increase of $90 in fees added to their total bill.
we never like instituting new fees. I mean, it's something that we have to look at very seriously and that we do somewhat reluctantly, obviously, because there is a financial impact to students.
According to the Financial Aid Office at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, students already pay an average $640 per year in fees for things like student government, athletics, technology, and transportation, among others. An annual survey by the College Board Advocacy and Policy Center shows University of Alaska students pay the second lowest tuition and fees in the nation behind Wyoming. Kate Ripley says the money collected through the new facilities fee will stay at the campus where it's collected.
One of the things that we heard from students is that they didn't think a tuition increase was fair because in that kind of scenario, a student at the University of Alaska Southeast in Ketchikan, for instance, would be paying higher tuition for a heat and power plant in Fairbanks.
In Fairbanks, the fees will go to help pay for the new heat and power plant. At other campuses, the money will be used for upgrades to classrooms, laboratories, and residence halls. According to the president's memo, the fees could bring in more than $3.6 million in revenue over the course of three semesters. There is no sunset date, and it's unclear if the fee will continue to increase beyond fall 2016. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
The Juneau School District is conducting an independent third-party investigation into an alleged hazing incident that took place 2 days after school ended in May. KTOO's Lisa Fu has more.
New school superintendent Mark Miller says he contacted Anchorage-based attorney John Sedor 2 weeks ago to help the district with a case involving high school students.
There's an allegation that some older students either kidnapped or in some way took some younger students out to a remote area and there was a paddling or hitting involved.
Miller says Sedor has worked with the Juneau School District for years and is an expert in school investigations.
He'll be working with the school district, with our employees, to determine whether or not our school rules or policies have been violated and ensuring that both the victims and the alleged perpetrators receive due process.
Hazing is considered one of the most severe violations of board policies and school rules. The student handbooks of Juneau Douglas High School and Thunder Mountain High School say the minimum penalty for hazing is up to 10 days of suspension. The maximum penalty is permanent expulsion. Principals from all three Juneau high schools looked into the alleged hazing incident over the summer. Miller says the Juneau Police Department completed its investigation without filing any charges. He says the district's probe is different than the police's.
We're not looking at criminal charges. We're looking at whether our policies were violated, our rules, which is a different question than what the police were looking for. We also have a lower standard of proof, if you will.
School Board President Sally Sadler says the board is not directly involved with the investigation. She says members can't receive any advance knowledge of it in case any grievances are filed. She says the board has strong concerns about the hazing culture in Juneau.
We feel that it's important to do what we can to change that culture so our kids feel safe, because it's going to be really difficult for our kids to be able to meet their academic responsibilities if they don't feel safe and secure in our schools. And so it's incumbent upon us as board members, as a district, and as a community to remove those barriers.
Sadler says the district has a well-written policy about bullying and hazing.
But that doesn't mean it's in practice, right? And I think that's where board and community and district administration concerns lay. We feel we've got a pretty strong policy in place, but clearly it's not working or there are ways in which we need to tweak them.
The board policy on hazing was last revised in 2011. Superintendent Miller expects the outside investigation to wrap up within the next 2 weeks. He says any student discipline that may result will have to remain confidential due to students' privacy rights. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doy Unlimited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. And by Spinard Builder Supply. For more than 60 years, SBS has helped Alaskans build from ground to roof to everything in between. Spinard Builder Supply is here to build with you. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Alaska state troopers say a 57-year-old Cordova woman drove herself to a hospital after she was mauled by a brown bear. Troopers were notified yesterday that Taya Thomas was attacked by the bear while hiking on Heaney Ridge Trail in the Cordova area. Salmon were actively spawning in a nearby stream as Thomas hiked with her two dogs. The dogs ran off and then returned with the bear running after them. Troopers say the bear noticed Thomas and attacked her multiple times. After the attack, Thomas walked a mile and a half back to her truck. Troopers say the trail is now closed for a week. Kotzebue is in the midst of one of its best commercial chum seasons ever. That's due to an exceptionally strong run size, and dockside economics are playing a role as well. Seth Kantner has been commercial fishing since the 1970s.
We just could not have taken advantage of the number of fish that we're getting this year without having three buyers. And all the buyers are quicker this year, just competition.
Not long ago, commercial fishing in Kotzebue was nearly dead. And over the decades, Kantner has seen the fishery in Kotzebue Sound peak and crash.
The 90s, things just kept tapering down, less of us fishing, almost where it was embarrassing to say you were fishing, as people thought of it as sort of a waste of time. And at that point, the prices just kept going to 25 and 23 and 19, 17, and there weren't that many fish some of those years either.
In 2002, with no local buyer, Kantner recalls having to pack and ship fish out himself. The total value of the fishery that year was just $7,500. This year, the commercial fleet is expected to pull in about $3 million. That, according to Nate Kocha, vice president of Manilak, is partly biology from a good brood year, but also the payoff from a five-year branding campaign at food expos in Asia, Europe, and the East Coast.
These fish are being marketed, and the brand that we have, of course, is Arctic Circle Wild Salmon.
Koch and AD Fish and Game anticipate another 2 weeks or so of commercial openings that are likely to push this year's harvest up to the third best on record. On a remote corner of the Tongass National Forest, a six-year-long stream restoration project is wrapping up. The cost, an estimated $1.2 million, funded largely from grants obtained by the Nature Conservancy. The project is intended to restore salmon streams damaged over 40 years ago on QU Island. KFSK's Elizabeth Jenkins has the story.
From the float plane, I can see turquoise water and patches of coastal islands. Then QU appears, swallowing up the landscape with dense forest. It's nearly five times the size of Seattle, with only a handful of residents. This is the site of the stream restoration project. Heath Whitaker from the U.S. Forest Service drives us to the location in his mud-splattered SUV.
I'm a water guy, a hydrologist, study of water.
His job is basically quality control for nearby streams, rivers, and aquatic habitat. He's been out here, sometimes for months at a time, overseeing the project.
We call it the QU Island Resort and Spa. It's great. We've got an infinity pool, massage parlor.
You're pulling my leg.
Yes, I am.
The location is remote, but there's electricity from a generator and basic housing. There's also miles of unpaved logging roads to get around the island. To understand the necessity of the stream restoration, you first need to know the history of QU. In the 60s and 70s, there were no regulated logging buffers along salmon streams.
So they were able to actually cut all the streams immediately adjacent to the stream banks, as well as, you know, using those streams themselves as yarding corridors.
The Forest Service anticipated that salmon spawning might be a problem. So in 1970, along with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, they tested out a theory. They removed log jams from streams to increase water flow.
You get more stream power, and with more stream power, you get larger cobble size.
After that, sediment the size of a grapefruit was tumbling down the waterway, further eroding the channel. Whitaker says almost 45 years later, we're starting to see the effects. There are less deep, cool pools for salmon to spawn, declining populations of coho and chum. Norm Cohen is the Southeast Alaska Program Director for the Nature Conservancy. That's the organization that helped find funding for the restoration.
The idea is that good habitat is needed for wild salmon populations, and if we can take actions now, these streams will be as productive as possible for the years to come.
From the flow plain, it's a long drive to Saginaw Creek, one of the four streams on Kiyu Island that's being restored. After changing into waders, we slather on bug spray and walk down the channel to see the work. The restoration itself looks like a really hard game of giant pickup sticks. A tangled mass of young and old growth trees, some of the roots still intact.
You know, you can kind of look at what nature provides and try to emulate those conditions, and it is kind of like a big puzzle.
The project used about 1,100 trees harvested from around the island. To move the heavy pieces, contractors used a helicopter and an excavator. Pathways were created out of an old spur road left over from timber harvest. Whitaker says initially the scale of the project seemed alarming.
Well, yeah, it's not something we're used to seeing, heavy equipment working in streams this size. And so, yeah, when they get in here and start working, it's kind of one of those whoa moments.
After all, this is the third time heavy equipment has trampled down Saginaw Creek.
But when you see the final product and see things coming together, this is the only way that can happen. Yeah, let's see. Try to leave you some clear water so you can see your feet. Okay.
We walk down the middle of Saginaw Creek, and Whitaker points to a shallow pool of water about a foot deep.
We're looking at a whole bunch of coho fry. I mean, they look like they're just hanging out, but they're actually in feeding lanes right now. They're all pointed upstream, and then when something floats downstream, they kind of pop out from that pocket and eat, just like that one did just now.
He says as the stream restoration nears its completion, he's hoping for what every hydrologist wants, a flood. Reporting from Kiyu Island, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Jocelyn Estes in Anchorage, Tim Ellis and Emily Schwing in Fairbanks, Ben Matheson in Bethel, Lisa Fu in Juneau, Zachariah Hughes in Nome, and Elizabeth Jenkins in Petersburg. APRN's Josh Edge reported from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine. ExxonMobil Alaska, where more than 1,000 Alaskan men and women are working on the Point Thompson Project, proving energy lives here. And by First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's business dreams grow for more than 90 years. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. Where can you see more than 1,000 entertainers, from Alaska native dancers to dinosaurs? Well, the Alaska State Fair. This year, everyone attending the fair can enjoy performers like Cirque Mechanics and Zuzu African Acrobats, or experience The Gathering Place, a new area celebrating Alaska's rich native cultures. Learn more at thealaskastatefair.org. Music, exhibits, and good time fun. It's what the Alaska State Fair is all about. This message sponsored by the Alaska State Fair.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.